I'm Amy Haddon Marsh with KDNK Local Newscast for this Thursday morning, December 15th, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. Colorado Open Lands is a nonprofit land conservation organization protecting land and water through conservation easements. Director of Communications Leslie Volker spoke to Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network member station KGNU.
Colorado Open Lands protects what we call our conservation values, and that is healthy local food production, that's scenic views, that's recreation opportunities, that's wildlife habitat and healthy rivers and streams. And we do that by protecting our land through a tool called a conservation easement. So a conservation easement is a voluntary legal protection that a private landowner chooses to put on their land. So their land stays in their ownership. We simply hold the development rights, essentially. So the land can't be subdivided or built upon aside within some small exceptions. So that means all the conservation values stay intact. On our staff, we have about half and half land protection specialists, and those are the people that meet with landowners and walk them through the process, because it is a long, sort of complicated process. And then the other half of our staff is the stewardship staff, and those people are charged with making annual visits to each property, meeting with the landowners, and just making sure that both sides are withholding, you know, their end of the agreement and making sure the conservation values are protected. You know, people assume that a lot of Colorado is owned by various government entities, and that's true. Pretty much everything above treeline is Forest Service land, and most of our mountain peaks are protected. But if you think about it, it's the mountain valleys where all the kind of interesting stuff happens. That's where all the wildlife live. That's where all the water flows. That's where the food is grown. And even though that this is private land, we all enjoy the benefits that come through that land and flow out of that land. If you want there to be Colorado beef and Colorado produce, we need conserved land. If you want our state to be self-sustaining from a water perspective, conserved land absolutely helps. If you want to protect tiny things like the Gunnison sage grouse and big things like elk and moose and mule deer and pronghorn, then we need to conserve land. If you get to that mountain peak and you want the view to not be buildings everywhere, we need to preserve that land. We take a look at polling every year, and somewhere between 70% and 80% of Coloradans say that they support this work, that they support conservation. We are bipartisan, nonpartisan, apolitical. We have supporters all up and down that spectrum, but only 2 or 3% make financial contributions.
More information at coloradoopenlands.org. Thanks to KGNU for sharing the audio. In November, Garfield County commissioners voted to opt in to Colorado's Commercial Property Assessed Clean Energy Financing Program, known as CPACE. News Director Gavin Dahl spoke to Catherine Rushton, commercial sales manager at Carbondale's Sunset Solar, to learn more.
It's a financing mechanism, and it's going to help commercial property owners really overcome the difficulty of having enough upfront capital to implement energy efficiency and renewable energy measures on their buildings. In the past, you know, maybe a business owner could go to their bank, but the terms weren't necessarily favorable. They were very short terms, and maybe interest rates were a little higher. What's different about CPACE is that loan repayments and financing terms can go up to 20 years, and so that really spreads out the cost of those repayments. And also the interest rates are going to be lower because there's less of a perceived risk from the financier's point of view.
How exactly does it benefit commercial property owners? Lay it out for us.
Okay, so as a commercial property owner, maybe you want to make some improvements to your building, but you're not sure if you're going to stay in that location. Most businesses change location within a 7-year period. So do you really want to put that investment into that building? Well, what's different about this is that the loan, along with the improvements, stay with the building. So if you're now going to sell that building to somebody else, the loan stays with the building, the improvements stay with the building, and the new owner gets to take advantage of those energy savings from the improvements, as well as pay back the loan.
And so then who else can benefit besides just commercial property owners?
So as well as commercial property owners, this is a financing mechanism for multifamily units, farms, ranches, and agricultural entities can also benefit. I know that governments and municipalities can participate. So you don't have to be a tax-paying entity, which is, you know, a point of confusion, because the repayments for these loans is actually going to be a new line item on the property tax bill that people receive. But it's not actually a tax. It's just that's the mechanism for making the repayments.
I've read that even nonprofits and hospitals could be eligible to participate.
Yeah, that's right. So really, it's about, you know, making improvements that are going to provide savings on your energy bills, and then you can use those savings to repay the loans.
So why was it so important for Garfield County to join this process along with Pitkin County and Eagle County?
Well, obviously, there's going to be a lot of advantages to this program. I think that it's possible that this may help to create jobs, and if not create, at least support the jobs that we already have in our existing clean energy economy here in Garfield County. Building owners will have the opportunity to enjoy energy savings. We'll probably be able to increase the amount of renewables we are using in the mix of our energy supply in Garfield County, and that's going to lead to a reduction in our carbon emissions. And I think it's great that this is happening within the context of the work that Garfield County are doing right now, and the town of Carbondale, in fact. They're both engaged in updating their climate action plans and setting more aggressive targets for reductions in carbon emissions. And this is just one mechanism that's going to help us achieve those goals.
So if someone out there listening to this is a contractor and they want to learn more about CPACE, what should they do?
Well, I think that they should probably go to the CPACE website. There's a lot of information on there for contractors. One of the first things they need to do really is to get registered. And then also they can find out about trainings and how to participate in the program.
Catherine Rushton, Commercial Sales Manager at SunSense Solar in Carbondale. Always so helpful coming in and explaining some of this stuff to us. Thanks so much, Catherine.
Thank you, Gavin.
The website for the program is copace.com. The second of five bilingual community meetings hosted by Glenwood Springs attorney Jennifer Smith and the Colorado Immigrants Rights Coalition drew about 20 people to Bridges High School on Sunday. KDNK sat down with Smith to talk about the meetings and the purpose they serve.
What was it about the election that made you decide to have community meetings?
It was the feedback we were getting from the community about the fears that were being voiced in the immigrant community.
What kind of fears?
Children afraid to go to school, parents afraid to go to work, fear that ICE would be at their door tomorrow to deport them, whether they had status or didn't. We heard also from non-immigrant children who were scared and afraid for their peers and their friends.
When you hear fears like this, what are you telling people?
The first thing is that we don't know what's going to happen and that nothing has changed yet. The law has not changed. Your rights have not changed. There is a lot of unknown, which makes any person nervous. Being unsettled and unsure creates anxiety for anybody. And talking to them about managing that, as well as knowing that nothing has changed right now, and that as we know more, we will help educate and support whoever we can, however we can.
What is it about the incoming administration's approach to immigration that is most unsettling to you?
My biggest concern as a lawyer is the expansion of certain enforcement activities that don't adhere to our normal Fourth Amendment and other constitutional policies. One example would be we have a policy called expedited removal, where enforcement officers can remove someone without a court proceeding or without any implementation of their due process rights. And that is my biggest concern, is that that would be expanded. Our immigration court system is already overloaded. So this discussion about deporting 11 million people or whatever hyperbole you may refer to is unrealistic because our courts already have an 800,000 case backlog. So my thought goes to, okay, well, how are they going to get around that if they can't put them in immigration court proceedings? Also, our detention facilities are full. These, of course, are private run facilities, so there is some money to be made should they decide to build more detention facilities. But in the short term, they don't have a place to house a majority of the people they want to deport, or at least have said that they want to deport. So my concern is that they'll do more with the expedited removal, which is where they expand the capacity to immediately deport someone without a due process and without detention or court.
Going back to these community meetings, tonight, it seemed as though it was simply a way to help immigrants deal with the police should they be pulled over. Is that sort of the goal of these meetings?
No, the goal of the meetings is really to hear the concerns of the community and help them get the information they need to deal with it. And at our last community meeting, there was a lot of discussion about police enforcement and how the police would be interacting with the immigrant community. And there was some people that expressed concerns about prior police engagement with immigrants. And so we thought it was appropriate to, as quickly as possible, get out the Know Your Rights information And also use that as a way for people who may not be concerned about having their rights violated to remind them that these are the things you can document and record so that we're all sending the same message of what's important to us in our community.
There seemed to be some skepticism about certain law enforcement saying, you know, this isn't going to happen in this community. We want people to feel safe. Why do you think that skepticism exists in this area?
There's a lot of people that mistrust the police for a variety of reasons because they see them as an agency with power that may or may not use it correctly. I do know there have been past experiences of collaboration between local law enforcement agencies and the ICE office, and I think that has certainly engendered additional fear. You know, if you know that you're going to get pulled over for a traffic stop, but maybe ICE is going to show up too, or maybe someone's coming to your house to ask you about a criminal matter, but ICE is there too, or you go to school, or you have any other kind of encounter with a law enforcement officer, and you never quite know whether that also means you're going to have an encounter with ICE, is hard to rebuild trust after. The dilemma, of course, is that ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is the law enforcement arm, essentially, of the Department of Homeland Security when it comes to immigration issues, and our police departments have similar goals, right? It's to protect us and to keep our communities safer. There's just a different policy sometimes about why they're doing what they're doing. And as a community member, I want our local law enforcement to have the trust of the community so that anyone can call if there's something wrong, and knowing that the police will come and take care of it without the threat of some other issue arising. You know, I also understand that there's times when ICE has information about criminals and they want to find that criminal. I just think that for purposes of the trust, they need to be separated.
That was Glenwood Springs immigration attorney Jennifer Smith.